So did anybody get all of them right? Anybody? Oh, all right. We got one winner in the crowd. Good job. We don't have a prize for you, but hey, that's all right. I took that first question as more of a personal challenge than a question. Like, can you eat 40,000 calories in one day? I'm going to find out next year. Hey, guys, I'm glad you're here with us. We're concluding the grass is always greener on the other side. And we've talked about this idea for the last few weeks that a lot of times we're in our lives and we're looking at other people's lives, and we're kind of comparing our behind the scenes to their highlight reels, right? And we're looking at their lives, and we're saying, wow, their life looks so amazing. And we're constantly so focused on their side of the grass that sometimes we neglect our side. And so today, we're actually going to talk about our side of the fence. And we're gonna kind of camp out and talk about this one word. And the word that we're going to talk about is ingratitude. Now, I know that you woke up this morning, you're like, wow, I really hope that Lance talks about ingratitude at church. Like, I brought my friends just so they could hear about ingratitude. But this is a word that maybe we haven't put a lot of thought into, right? Maybe we haven't thought a lot about this emotion or this action in our life. But the truth is that ingratitude plays a really big role in our lives. But first, let's kind of discuss, where does this even come from? Because this isn't something that you're purposely taught growing up, hopefully, right? Like, no parent teaches their kid, I'm going to teach you how to be ungrateful, and it's going to be amazing, right? No, nobody does this intentionally. I've never met anybody that they have a goal to be ungrateful to people. I've never met anybody like that. So where does ingratitude even come from? Where does this kind of monster in our life come from that maybe we've never even thought about, or maybe we've never even considered that we might deal with this inside? And I think maybe it's less from an action and more from the absence of something. Here's what I mean, is that unexpressed gratitude is experienced as ingratitude. Unexpressed gratitude is experienced as ingratitude. There's a famous author named Doug Pollock. He wrote this book called Godspace. And in the book, he said that communication is 50% what you say or the way you act, and 50% what the other person hears or what they experience. And so sometimes ingratitude, it's almost never intentional, is it? It's more of something that we forget to do, something that is missing. Maybe the number one area that everybody in here can relate with this on is the relationship between parents and their children. Am I right? Here's a picture of me and my family, okay? I am the adorable little redhead right down here, okay? That is me. I'm not the one with the glasses, all right? That's my dad. This is an old church directory photo, just in case you were wondering. I know you were all curious. And I like showing baby pictures because then my wife is like, oh, we should have a baby. So anyways, going on. Here you go, Caitlin. So parents and their children, right? When I was growing up, my dad really believed in chores. Anybody else out there, like your dad believed in chores, right? We had chores growing up. We were expected to do them just because my dad wanted to teach us that, hey, you need to be responsible. You need to have things that are your job and your duty, and you need to learn this at a young age, even before you have a job. But one thing that my dad did really, really good for my brother and I, when we were growing up, when we did our chores, he always said thank you for doing them. Now, were we expected to do our chores? Absolutely, right? It was not an option at my house. Like, you want to do your chores? No, I'm good. It was, you're going to do your chores. But my dad always said thank you for that. And it lifted me up when my dad said thank you. And I don't know if it was just something natural for him or if he was saying thank you because after 100 times of reminding me, I finally took out the trash. I'm not sure which way it was. But my dad was really good about expressing gratitude after I did something. And one chore that we never, ever had growing up was washing the dishes. My brother and I never had to wash the dishes. It wasn't like it's your night or it's your day. We never had to do that. And so the reason why is because we had this really, really cool house where you put your dishes in the sink, and then the next day when you got up, they were washed, dried, and put back in the cabinet again. It was the coolest house in the world. I hope you have one of those. They're amazing. But I moved to college, and when I moved to college, I got my own house. And me and my roommates, I lived with three other guys, and we would have this thing called Meat Tuesdays. And on Tuesdays, we would just eat a ton of meat. And like, that's all that we would eat. And so, of course, there's going to be a lot of dirty dishes from that. Well, the first one that we have, we put all the dishes in the sink. I go to bed. I get up the next day, and I look, and they're still sitting in the sink. And it hits me. I bought a defective house. Like, my house is broken. Something is wrong with this. And then I kind of started thinking about all the dishes that my mom had done, the thousands and thousands of dishes that she had done, and how ungrateful it probably seemed as me, this little kid, not even saying thank you for all the dishes. So to all the moms out there and all the dads, everybody who does dishes, thank you, right? Thank you for that, yeah. And here's kind of what it created in me, though, is it almost created this monster inside of me that decided I will never leave a dirty dish in the sink. And so I just washed dishes. And it got to an unhealthy point where I would go over to people's houses and kind of judge them. And if I walked in and there was dishes, it was like, we can have greetings later. I'm going to go wash your dishes for you. And that's the truth. That's not like, I started dating this amazing woman in college named Caitlin. And while we were dating, I learned that a college house with three girls is a lot messier than a college house with three guys. And I remember going over the first time and there was just this pile of dishes in the sink. And I'm like, challenge accepted, right? And so I went and did the dishes, and her roommates were so grateful, and that's when she decided she was going to marry me, right? So if you're single in here and you're looking, wash the lady's dishes, all right? And so I would always go over there, and once a week, I would end up going over there, and there would be these dishes, and I would wash them. And then Caitlin and I got married, and we got married, and we got back from our honeymoon, and I was like, oh, I'm going to wash the dishes, and she's going to be so grateful for this. And so I washed the dishes. She doesn't say anything. And I'm like, what's changed, right? And so I'm like, oh, she just didn't see me. She must not see me. So I let the dishes pile up, and I wait until she's in the kitchen with me, and I'm like, hi, Caitlin, like washing the dishes in front of her. She's like, hi, you know? And it to me, it was, and this is what I'm getting through. To me, I perceived it as ungrateful. But she was not ungrateful in any term, right? It was just that unexpressed gratitude to me communicated ingratitude. The same way probably to my mom, the many times she washed dishes and I never even said thank you, communicated that ingratitude. And the interesting thing about this is that when it comes to ingratitude, the recipient is always aware, are they not? The person who feels neglected is always aware, but the initiator is rarely aware. It's a hard thing to see in the mirror. Anger, you can see that in the mirror. Jealousy, hatred, those emotions you can see, but ingratitude, how do you spot that? How do you even know if it's a struggle with you? How do you know if it's going on? And then maybe it's something that you have dealt with, and you've heard this phrase that we're going to look at, and this is a phrase that is like nails on a chalkboard to some people. It's like it's a gut punch, and if you hear it, it's offensive. And it's this phrase right here, you're so ungrateful. You're so ungrateful. Yeah, nobody wants to hear that, right? How many of you in here are ungrateful? Please don't raise your hands. let's do this a different way. How many of you in here have ever been 13, right? we hear this phrase, you're so ungrateful, but if we ever heard that, I guarantee our response would be, I'm not ungrateful. I feel extremely grateful. But if we feel it and we don't express it to our loved ones, then how are they going to know? How will they know? And here's why this is so important and why we're talking about this today is because gratitude and ingratitude are relationally determinative. What this means is that our relationships are going to be strengthened or hurt based on gratitude or ingratitude. You see, when somebody is grateful for you, doesn't that make you want to be closer to them? When somebody expresses gratitude or shows gratitude, it builds this trust and intimacy in your friendships, in your marriage, in your relationships. It does something that you go, that's a person that I want to do life with. That's a person that I'm on board with. But when somebody is ungrateful, sometimes it makes you feel a little invisible, doesn't it? It makes you feel like, do they even notice the work I'm doing? Do they even see me? Do they even recognize me? And what it causes is it causes distance and tension in our relationships. And so this is a big deal, and this is something that we want to unpack and look at together. And so what we're going to do is we're going to see what Jesus actually says about gratitude and ingratitude. And maybe you're here today and you're not a Christian, you're just kind of checking out church, or maybe you came cuz somebody said you could get some free coffee and you're like, "Man, I don't know about this." And I just want to say that the teachings that Jesus taught, the things that he taught will make you better at life and make life better for you. They're not just for Christians. This is for everybody today. And so let's kind of look at what happened in this story. We're going to be in the book of Luke. And the author, Luke, he's one of my favorite authors. And what he did was he was a man who lived in the same time period as Jesus, and he wasn't a direct disciple of Jesus. So for those 3 years that Jesus did ministry, Luke wasn't one of those 12 solid guys that was with him, but Luke was a doctor at this time. And Luke heard about Jesus and heard about his teachings and his healings, and he decided, you know what? I want to investigate this guy. I want to look into it and discover if the things that he did were true. So Luke sought out not to just prove if Jesus was God, but to look for the truth. And he discovered truth, and he said, you know what? I have to share this with people. This is how he starts off his book. He says in Luke 1:1-4, he says, many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us. So he's saying there's a lot of people writing about Jesus and about the things that he's done. And he says, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theopolis. And that's just his friend Theopolis. And I don't know about you, but I would love if somebody addressed me as like most excellent Lance, right? It'd be pretty great. I said that, and then last night somebody shot me a text message, and they were like, most excellent Lance. Okay. In verse 4, he says, so that you may know the certainty of the things that have been taught. Luke starts off his book saying, hey, I want you to know that I have carefully investigated these things so that you can be certain the things I'm writing about are true. So when we go through the book of Luke, this isn't just stories that he heard and he said, oh, that sounds good, I'm going to write that down. These are things that Luke said, I'm going to carefully investigate these so you can be certain about the things I'm writing, so that you can be certain about these stories, about all the things that Jesus did. I want you to be certain. So when we walk through this story today, we're going to look at a time when Jesus healed 10 men at once. When we walk through this, we can have certainty knowing that Luke investigated this and that this is a true story, that this is facts that we're presented today. So let's dive into this. In Luke 17, we start off in verse 11. And he says, now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. So he's out there with some of his friends, and Jesus is walking between Samaria and Galilee. This is a very desolate place. This is a desert area, a place that is not desirable to go. It's a place where the outcasts from society would be. People who had been pushed out for sickness or for criminal reasons, or people who were on the run or hiding. It would be those people who were outcast and on the run. And it's not like there's good places to stop in this area. It's a desolate place. It's not a desirable place. The best way I know how to describe this is the land between Alamogordo and El Paso, right? It's that area that you don't want to be at. If we were driving a church van to a softball game in El Paso, and this cool like white smoke started coming out from under the hood while I was driving it, and we got stranded on the side of the road with a bunch of guys for a while, that is not a place you're like, I really hope I get stranded between Alamo and El Paso. It's going to be great. You see, this is an area where there's not going to be a lot of desirable things or people there. And if you live there, I'm not saying you're not desirable, okay? But in this area, that's what's going on. And so Jesus is in this area, and this is what happens. In verse 12, it says, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. So there's these 10 guys that have leprosy. And at this time, this disease was considered highly contagious. It's not as contagious as they thought. It was definitely contagious. But they thought it was so contagious that if you had it, you were an outcast from society. You couldn't be with your family, with your friends. You were pushed out of the culture. And so these men, they were the outcasts of their society. Leprosy was a disease that would attack your body from the inside out, and it would begin eating away at your nerves and your immune system. And you would get these scars and boils, and sometimes it would eat away so much at them that you would lose your eyesight, and even to the point where if you got a cut or a scrape, you might not know, and it would get infected, and you could end up losing a limb. And so these guys, they looked pretty rough, right? They probably looked kind of rough, and it says they called out from a distance. They understood that the law prohibited them from getting close to Jesus and the people with him. And so they call out from a distance, and one thing that we get from them is, even if you feel distant from God at a time, you can call out to God from a distance, and God is still going to hear you. So they call out from this distance, and they say, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And Jesus responds, it says, when he saw them, he said, go, show yourselves to the priests. That's an interesting thing to say, right? Like, okay, go ahead and go show yourselves to the priest. And he probably yelled back at him, go show yourselves to the priest. And to us, it's like, I don't know, I don't get that. But in this culture, to understand this, that if you had a sickness like this, the only way you could be found clean or be reintroduced into society is if you went in front of the priest and they examined you head to toe and looked at you and they said that you were healed. And so Jesus is telling 10 men with leprosy, all 10 of them, hey, all of you, go show yourselves to the priest. What he's telling them is that you're going to be healed. Go to the priest. Notice that Jesus doesn't instantly just say, you're healed. Notice he doesn't heal them right there, but he sends them somewhere on a journey first. He says, go show yourselves to the priest. And it finishes off the verse and says, and as they went, they were cleansed. I've heard a lot of people ask, what does it look like to walk by faith? Maybe you have a bumper sticker that says walk by faith. Maybe it's in your Instagram bio, right? But however it is, what does it mean to walk by faith? And I think that these men set a perfect example for us of what it means to walk by faith. They didn't know what the outcome was going to look like. They didn't know what the journey was going to be. They just knew that God had called them to go somewhere. And as they went, they were cleansed. You see, just kind of to imagine their journey, that they're walking and their friends are like, dude, your scars, they're going away. Your boils, they're going away. You got a limb that just grew back, like your arm grew back. I don't know. But as they went, they were cleansed. And they didn't stop halfway and say, you know what? I think I'm good enough. Like, I think I'm healed enough. They walked by faith to the full spot that Jesus had called them to. You see, to walk by faith means I don't know what the journey is going to look like. And maybe you're in the middle of that journey and it's painful, it hurts a little bit. But if you go to the place that God has called you to go, it's going to be worth it. And I can promise you that. And so these men decided, we are going to go. And so they present themselves to the priest. And then in verse 15, it says one of them. So pop quiz, how many did we start off with? 10. All right, perfect. So we start off with 10. One of them. What was so specific about one of them? It says one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back. Came back to do what? This is confusing. If he was healed, why didn't he go to his family right away, right? He might have been away from them for years. Why didn't he go to his friends? Why didn't he go back to his job? One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. And in verse 16, it says he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. You see, the whole idea of gratitude kind of hinges on these two verses right here. This man, Jesus set him up to move forward in life. He healed him. He gave him back his life. But this man decided, it's worth it for me to go back for a moment and thank Jesus. You see, we don't know how long the journey was for him. He might have been just minutes away from the priest. He might have been hours away. He might have been days away. We don't know how long the journey was. But we know that this man thought it was important enough to go back and thank Jesus, to go back and express gratitude to him. And so what about the rest of them, though? And Jesus says, and so he went back to thank the one who enabled him to move forward with his life. He decided it's worth it to go back and thank Jesus because he set me up to move forward with my life. But what about the rest of them, right? And so Jesus says this. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? And so he's bringing out this point. He's saying, hold on, there were 10 of you. One of you came back. And he says, weren't all 10 of you cleansed? Where are the other 9? And so obviously Jesus is looking at this and saying, hey, there's an importance to expressing gratitude here. I think there's value to what this one man did. He came back. And in verse 18, it finishes our story and it says, Jesus says, has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. And so this one guy comes back, but the other 9, they didn't. They didn't come back and express that gratitude. And if we were hearing this story and we were alive at this time and those other 9 guys were next to us, wouldn't we give them like the death stare, right? And we would look at them and we would probably ask them that phrase that we said was so offensive. Why are you so ungrateful? Why are you so ungrateful? He healed you. He set you up to win in life. He set you up for success in your future. He brought you back with your family, your friends, your culture. Why are you so ungrateful? But I could almost guarantee that every single one of those nine men would say, I'm not ungrateful. I feel extremely grateful. I told my family what Jesus did for me. I told the priest what Jesus did for me. I told my friends about what Jesus did. I even told a stranger about it. I'm not ungrateful. I feel extremely grateful. So the other nine, they felt it, but they didn't express it. And Jesus seemed to think it was pretty important for the one that expressed it. He seemed to think it was pretty important that one man decided it's worth going back to thank him because he set me up for success, because he helped me in an area of life that I was suffering and I was hurt, and I need to go back and I need to thank him for that. You see, a lot of times we tend to keep our appreciation kind of bottled up. And it's like, no, I definitely feel grateful. We would have the same attitude if somebody told us we were ungrateful. No, I feel extremely grateful. But just like the other nine, sometimes it's not enough to feel it. We need to express it with people. And so I want to walk through kind of four points that we can draw out of this story and four things that we get from gratitude and ingratitude that will help us with our relationships and with life. And then at the end, we're going to kind of have a little homework assignment to all work on together. Is that okay? All right, cool. You guys are like, I don't know about that. All right. So here's the first thing that we get out of this. And we talked about this a little bit at the beginning, right? That unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. That when we don't express our gratitude to our loved ones, when we don't express that, it can easily communicate ingratitude to people. And like we talked about, that's going to cause tension and that's going to cause distance in relationships. And we don't want that. And so maybe you're already thinking of an area of your life right now where this could be helpful for you, to maybe express a little bit of gratitude to somebody that just needs you to show it. So unexpressed gratitude, it communicates that ingratitude that can hurt our relationships. The second thing that we get out of this is that unexpressed gratitude is experienced as rejection. And maybe you felt this. You prepared a meal for your family. You got it all ready. You even set the table nice. You like put the forks on the right side this time. You got it all ready. And your family came down and you're excited to eat. And they're like, okay, I'm going out. I'm going to Buffalo Wild Wings tonight. The game's on. And you're like, but I prepared a meal for you. Okay, I'll see you later. And you almost feel invisible. It's that feeling of rejection. Maybe you work so hard for your family and you work so hard to provide for them and you feel like they spend faster than you can bring it in. And Black Friday is just a nightmare for you, right? Maybe that's the way you feel. And you feel like they don't even appreciate the hard work that you're putting into everything. And you're sitting back going, why doesn't anybody appreciate me? And if you asked your family, they would definitely say, no, I appreciate you. I'm very grateful. But that expression almost makes you feel rejected, like your work isn't good enough. Or maybe it's at work. Maybe it's you feel that way about your boss or your employees or your coworkers. And you're putting extra time into work, and you feel like nobody sees it. And you almost feel rejected at work. And here's why this is so dangerous in relationships, is because our hearts gravitate towards acceptance. Would you agree with that? That when somebody is accepting to us, we naturally gravitate towards them. We naturally want to be around them and in relationship with them. But on the flip side of that is that our hearts are repelled by rejection. That when we feel rejected, we will push ourselves and distance ourselves from people. And so if unexpressed gratitude can communicate rejection and rejection can repel people, then shouldn't we be people of expressed gratitude to show that and to say, you know what, I'm going to go above and beyond to let you know that I'm grateful for you. But Lance, I have plenty of time to do this, right? Like I get the time with them and I think that that's good enough. But the dangerous thing is that you may have their time, but not their hearts. And when it comes to relationships, it's more important to have the hearts of people than is the time of people. Because that's what's going to last. That's what's going to make a difference, is if we have the hearts of people. And this even boils down into work, right? That with your employees, you might have their time, but do you have their hearts? Do you have their hearts? Are they on board with you? Are your family, do you have their hearts? Have you worked hard to cultivate and strengthen those relationships with them? And the next thing that we get out of this is that that we learn is that unexpressed gratitude may indicate an inflated view of self. And this was one that when I was kind of preparing the sermon, I'm like, oh, this is a hard one for me, right? I was like, man, this is probably my area of struggle the most. Is that unexpressed gratitude might indicate an inflated view of self. If it's hard for you to say thank you, I would challenge you to ask why. Why is it difficult for you to say thank you to people? You see, when we hold gratitude back, it's like we have this pocket full of IOUs. And we just keep piling them up and like putting them in our pockets. And we're like, well, I owe that person, but I really don't want to let them know that they did a good job. I really don't want to give them credit for helping me. And it causes us to get an inflated view of ourselves. It causes us to think that we're better than we actually are. It causes pride to come into our lives. And that's not anything that any of us want in our lives, right? Nobody strives to be prideful. And so what would gratitude do, though? If unexpressed gratitude may indicate an inflated view of self, what can expressed gratitude do? And that's this, is that gratitude is an acknowledgement of my indebtedness and my dependence upon others. So what that means is when we express gratitude to people, it's admitting, I didn't get here on my own. I didn't come to be the person that I am by myself. You helped me along the journey. You were there with me. And it shows that, hey, I didn't do this on my own. And what it does is it releases some of that pride and it builds up a lot of that humility in your life. And so if you're here and you're having a hard time and maybe you're like me and you're like, man, I do find it difficult sometimes to say thank you, then maybe your option is to admit that I didn't get where I am on my own and I didn't do this on my own. I need to show some gratitude to people who helped get me there. And the last thing about unexpressed gratitude is that unexpressed gratitude leaves something unfinished. Now, we teach toddlers this at a very young age. I've been to a lot of toddlers' birthday parties, and there's two things that are similar about every single one. Number one, they make the biggest mess that I've ever seen, right? Somehow there's more wrapping paper when they're done than there was on the presents. I don't even understand it. And number two, they just try to go through the presents as fast as possible, do they not? Like, no kid stops and goes, ooh, I really want to look at this for a little bit. It's like, bah, next present. And they just move on as fast as they can. But every parent that I've been to a toddler's birthday party, every single parent stops the kids and they say, what do you tell Auntie Jan, right? Thank you. And you stop your kids because we understand that with unexpressed gratitude, it leaves something unfinished. That we have this, somebody has done something for you and they've started this loop, but it's not complete yet until they receive something from you. Then it is complete. When somebody does something for you, that's just half of the process. It's not until they receive something from you that it is complete, because express gratitude closes the loop. It completes and finishes something in relationships. It kind of all boils down to this, that when it comes to gratitude, it's not enough to feel it. It's not enough to just feel grateful. You've got to express it. There has to be that expression of gratitude from us. And so when you came in today, you had a note card on your seat and a pencil. If you can go ahead and grab those for me. And today, you're going to write down two names on this note card. And the first name that I want you to think about is, who do you need to close the loop with? Who has done something for you that you need to be grateful for? We've been in our series, The Grass is Always Greener. And like I said at the beginning, we've talked about the other side of the fence a lot. But what if we looked at our side for a little bit? And we said, you know what? I've got some pretty good looking grass over here. Maybe your life isn't perfect, but you would admit, even if it's just a few patches of green grass, that you have some green grass on your side. You see, somebody came along and taught you how to plant. Somebody came along and taught you how to start things in life. Whether it was how to fill out a job resume, maybe it was how to start a healthy relationship. Maybe somebody took time to introduce you to Jesus and tell you about his love. Maybe it was somebody who helped you start new after you had a broken relationship or you moved to a new area. You're new to Alamogordo and you're trying to figure out the city and it's a little confusing. And somebody took time to help you start. Who was it that helped you start things in life? And then after things were started, somebody came along and helped you learn how to water the grass, right? Somebody helped you learn how to grow. Somebody took time to mentor you. Maybe it was, if you're a teenager in here, I'll just give you the answer right now. It's your parents. Write your parents' name down. Your homework is done. But maybe for you, you didn't have the best home life, and so it was a coach. A coach took you in and began to teach you ethics and hard work. Or maybe it was a teacher that just took time to really pour into you. Or maybe it was a friend's parents who really poured into you. A grandma, a grandpa. Maybe it was a complete stranger at Walmart. But whoever it was, who took time to say, you know what? I'm gonna take my time, my own personal time, and I want to help you out in your life. I'm gonna help you learn how to cultivate healthy dating relationships. I'm gonna help you learn how to be in a healthy working environment. I'm gonna help you learn how to raise your children. Who helped you out in your phase of life? Or maybe it was a different kind of area and you had some weeds show up in your yard. You had some toxic relationships come aboard. You had some family. It's that one family member that you prayed would not show up to your house at Thanksgiving, but they were there on Thursday. And if they're here with you, do not look at them right now. Maybe it was a marriage that was falling apart and there were some weeds that got in there. Maybe it was some things that you were into, some addictions that somebody came along and said, hey, I want to help you kill these now so they don't take over your life later. Who helped you deal with the weeds in your life? Who came in and saw these dangers, these hurts and said, I want to help you with these so you don't have to deal with them? You see, each and every one of us in here, we have at least one person who helped us out with our side of the fence, who took time out of their life to say, it's worth it to invest in somebody else. Who do you need to close the loop with? Who have you taken for granted? Who do you owe a debt of gratitude to? Who are you grateful for? And who needs to hear this from you? You see, somebody, you may need to go home and make a phone call after this. You might need to go home and write a thank you card. You might need to have a face-to-face conversation with somebody. But however it is, who do you need to close the loop with? And the second name, this is a little bit harder. This is a little bit more difficult, to be honest. The second name that I want you to write down is, who needs you to begin the loop? You see, you have your grass and you're looking at it, and there's some other people's lives that you've looked at and gone, I don't want my life to look like that. Like, that grass does not look healthy. I don't want to be part of that. But they need somebody to step into their story just like somebody stepped into yours. Who in your life that you know is suffering, is hurting? Maybe they're going through a bad breakup. Or maybe they're going through a really rough spot, a job transition, whatever it is. Who needs you to begin that loop with them? And the reason that can be so hard is because, like we talked about, there's going to be a lot of people who probably won't close the loop. And they might not express gratitude for that. But we have to understand, church, that we don't begin the loop to receive that gratitude. We begin the loop because there's hurting people who need us. And so who in your life needs you to begin that loop? As we close today, I want to close with this last idea, is that when it comes to gratitude, gratitude is evidence that I have life in proper perspective. Gratitude is evidence that I realize I can't do this on my own. I realize that there's people who have gotten me to the places I am, and I realize that, most importantly, that God has been there with me through the journey. And maybe that's your place to start. Maybe you're here today and you're willing to say, Lance, if there's one person that I have not expressed my gratitude to enough, it's God. And I need to take some time and tell him thank you, because I wouldn't be who I am today and I wouldn't be where I am today without God. And to be honest, I haven't expressed gratitude to him for that. And maybe that's your place to start. If you'll stand with me today. Let's pray together to close this out. God, we thank you so much for who you are, and we just thank you, God, that we get to learn from you, and that we get to learn from this story of Jesus when he went and he healed these 10 men. And we realize, God, that when it comes to gratitude, it's not enough to feel it, that we need to express it. And so there's some conversations that we're going to need to have, some phone calls that we're going to need to make. And there's some people that we're going to need to close the loop with in our lives, God, that we're going to need to express that gratitude to. And it's not always easy, Lord, but we know that you need us to do that, God, and we need to do that in our lives. And so, God, I pray that this week that we would all go out and we would begin closing loops in our lives, that we would begin expressing gratitude to people who are close to us, to our family and friends, God, to strengthen and build on those relationships. And God, I pray that as we begin to start some of these loops, that can also be a difficult process. And we just pray, God, that we would have the strength and courage to start these loops, that you would show us the people in our lives that need that, that you would show us the people who are needing help, and that we would go and help them. God, I thank you so much for each and every person in here, and I just pray that this week would be a great week for all of us. We love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you all next week.